Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 17th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Anthony Cabot, a distinguished fellow in gaming law at UNLV's William S. Boyd School of Law, on a program funded by Entain that will deliver online gaming law classes to people from around the world. This week's program is brought to you by Konami Gaming. Later in the show, we're talking about a Konami creation that keeps reaching more and more properties year after year. So stay tuned. One time, Desperado, little, what's your name? Anthony Cabot is one of the most effective gaming attorneys in the industry, so it was no surprise when he was named Distinguished Fellow in Gaming Law by the UNLV Boyd School of Law upon his retirement. But you can't keep a good man down, so he's been able to promote the law school and recently was included in an announcement that Entain, the British iGaming provider, would launch an online gaming law program for operators, regulators, lawyers, and others who work in and around the global gaming industry. He also addresses what he sees as shortcomings in the approach to problem gambling in Nevada. He spoke with me via Zoom from the law school in January. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Our guest today is Tony Cabot, distinguished fellow at the Boyd Law School and UNLV. That's the correct title, right, Tony?
That is correct.
Okay, great. I always wonder what a distinguished fellow is. I tried to get it from Feldman, and he gave me a different answer. So. but congratulations on getting that role. It's a great role to have. So you've been a pretty distinguished attorney for the last 30 years or so. I think you're one of the top attorneys in the business for sure. So what does it feel like to be able to shape the next generation of gaming attorneys?
Well, it's actually quite a lot of fun because, one of the great advantages of being at UNLV, in particular at the law school, is that we have the Masters of Law program.
Sure.
Brings in people from all over the world.
Right.
Well, so now I get the opportunity not only to deal with a lot of young students, but also a lot of people who have experience in gaming law and regulation in countries throughout the world.
Sure.
So it's been a real a treat to do that.
Yeah. And also to have those, a lot of these people who are interested in gaming law are coming from new jurisdictions where, it's not a really established department, really. So have you been able to really kind of shape what they think about gaming law?
Well, I hope so.
You know,
one of the great things about the program is these people will come in from these various jurisdictions. They all have different types of government and different systems.
Sure, right, yeah.
We try to figure out ways that, the best practices that are arising in gaming law and regulation can be adopted for their jurisdiction. And they're going back and, a lot of them have some, relatively significant positions in government.
Sure.
So I'm hoping that they're going to be applying a lot of the things they learned at the law school there.
Yeah, no question about that. So you recently announced that you got a program that's sponsored by Entain. Entain is, of course, the British company used to be called GVC. They have a bunch of big brands under their umbrella, including BetMGM. They're a partner in that in the United States. Give us a little background on what you're going to do with that program.
Sure. So, Entain came and they were interested in helping us sponsor an executive education program. And one of the things that we found, we always have a booth at G2E, is that people come around and say, I don't have time to go back to law school and become
right.
a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
but gaming law is really important to what I do, right? They could be compliance officers or internal audit officers or regulators.
Sure.
We're going to have a program that's going to be for non-lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, well, we've always wanted to do that, and Entain made it possible. And so we're beginning to introduce the classes where someone who's in the industry or in government or is just plain interested can start taking classes in different topics of gaming law.
Sure. And what are some of the classes you're going to offer?
So I'm going to be teaching a class called Intro to Gaming Law,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of an overview of how gaming law and the industry intersect.
Sure.
Right. we're covering all sorts of topics, licensing and money laundering and internal controls and technical standards, all different areas. But after that, or at the same time, the students can take a number of other classes. Bill Buffalo, a longtime industry member, is teaching gaming operations in the law. So that'd be more applicable to, say, somebody who's an executive and wants to learn more about how gaming law impacts operations. Catherine Rand and Stephen Light are going to be very, very well-known professors in the area of Indian gaming. They're going to be teaching a class on Indian gaming.
Right.
And Alan Feldman and David Figler are going to be teaching a class on problem gambling and responsible gambling.
Okay.
So that's our first four. We'll probably end up with a total of about 8 to 10. We're working on sports wagering in the law, and we're working on anti-money laundering in the law.
Okay.
Casino. So we're going to be adding on as we go along. But those are our initial four class offerings.
Okay. And possibly something on esports, I would imagine?
Yeah, I certainly think that esports is going to come. It's not going to be in the, probably the next four, but after that, I think we're going to have the opportunity to take a look at esports.
Okay, and this will all be online, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it's all online. About 80% of it is pre-taped, right?
Okay.
And there are lessons that they go through at their own pace, along with the materials to read and quizzes and things of that nature. And then about 20% of it will be online, but it'll be live. So it'll be interaction with the students. These very things.
Okay. All right, great. You and I have a mentor in common, Bob Fess. You worked with him at the long lamented, departed Lionel Sawyer Collins. What a great law firm that was! And of course, he was involved in the Boyd Law School also toward the end of his career. And he, as I mentioned, he was a mentor to me. I know he was to you as well. Is that, do you kind of model your teaching style after Bob?
In a large respect. I mean, one of the things Bob did was he was the consummate gentleman lawyer.
Right, for sure.
And he was so good at building relationships and doing presentations and his whole demeanor about him was really kind of quite special.
Sure.
Right. But this year I'm teaching at the law school a class on gaming practice.
Right.
And I try to instill in the students that it's not an adversarial process. It really is the ability to work in common with the regulators to reach a position that mutually benefits both the regulators and the client.
Right.
Bob was unbelievable at that, right?
Right.
And Bob was able to identify where he wanted to get. He understood that what the regulators were after. He understood what his client was after, and did it in a cooperative methodology that was really quite amazing.
Right. Yeah. He definitely had a big impact on my career, and I know he did on yours as well. So that's great. So one of the areas that you mentioned that you're going to be covering is sports betting, and obviously that's a new area to 99% of the U.S. that are getting involved in it now. What are some of the legal challenges do you think these states are going to get into when it comes to sports betting?
Well, I think you have two different challenges. The first is getting a competent regulatory system in place, right? And one of the things I really worry about is that things move so quickly, the proliferation of sports wagering, that the states, I think in large respect, are appointing regulators that don't have sufficient knowledge of what they're trying to accomplish and how they need to accomplish regulation. And so I think that is a problem.
Right.
But the other problem is that, I think we're moving so quickly, we're not paying significant attention to some really critical areas. So, for example, insider trading.
Right. Right. Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if there's an insider trading scandal in one of these smaller states that has sports wagering, I don't think they even know what to do about it.
Right.
Right. And so the integrity of wagering, I think, needs to be a little more focused. And it needs to be focused not only on a cooperative state-by-state basis, but I still think there's a role of the federal government to deal with sports integrity.
Sure.
We need to see some changes in federal law that strengthen prohibitions against bribery and things of that nature, mm-hmm. and a lot more focus by the federal government on investigation and prosecution of these matters.
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things that I've asked a lot of these operators are, you know, how can you avoid the money laundering situation when you know, and maybe one state could cover it, like they would bet a certain amount of money on one side and then go to another state and bet, you know, that equal amount on the other side, they'd lose the vig, but that'd be just a little bit of their profit. So, I mean, nobody answered that adequately for me.
Yeah, look, I think that there has to be some better clearinghouse for data.
Right.
So that we can start to track. You know, one of the things that's an advantage of sports wagering is that you have to establish an account. So you have to have a know your customer sort of atmosphere. And you do it on a state-by-state basis, that's fine. But if the states aren't cooperating and sharing information.
Sure.
So that you know when things happen, like betting both sides of a game in different jurisdictions,
right.
or insider trading, or you know, match fixing,
sure.
or phone shaving.
Yeah,
this is a great example of where state by state, it has some holes in it if it's not properly filled.
Yeah, no question about that. And then there's the question of professional sports teams getting involved. Obviously, at this point, it seems to be just sponsorships and things like that. But I think the owner of the Phoenix team, the Coyotes, owns a casino, and he just got into sports betting. So you know, then that becomes a little murky.
Yeah, it's a good example too. I think of where there's not enough focus by the regulators on some of these issues, right? And I think that having a sports team owner also owning the sports book is an inherent conflict of interest.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
And if a scandal arises out of it, which we, knock on wood, we hope it doesn't,
right.
we could have some serious implications for both industries.
Sure. No right? question about that. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think we have to give more thought to these sorts of matters. Not only on a state-by-state basis, but on a broader basis, so that we have some consistencies in how we approach them from a national perspective.
Sure, sure. And then, you know, this kind of leads us into discussion of responsible gaming or safer gaming, as they're calling it now. You know, do these new companies to the industry understand their responsibilities to their customers when it comes to responsible gaming?
Look, I think some do and some don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think the problem is, right? You know, you see some of the larger companies who are implementing some pretty innovative programs with regard to responsible gambling. And I applaud them for that, right?
Yeah, sure.
You know, in a place like Nevada where you have literally hundreds of casinos and thousands of smaller locations that have slot machines,
mm-hmm.
you're not getting the industry breath that you really need to address this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always concerned me that, we're going to have some great shiny examples.
Right.
We're going to have a lot of examples of people doing nothing.
Right, yeah.
Or worse, you know, encouraging bad behavior.
Sure, sure. Right. Right.
So, you know, I've always tried to think about, how we can change that, right? How we can improve the way that all of the providers are handling their customers. And so far, we really haven't done a great job.
Yeah, no question.
So, one of the things I was thinking of is some type of programs, not much different than like LEED does for certification for buildings,
right,
that meet certain
environmental
aspects, mm-hmm, right? Where you can have some kind of certification of programs so that people who are in the industry can use it as a marketing tool and say, look, at we have the gold standard or the platinum standard for responsible gambling.
Right.
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 And try to, you know, raise all the boats by having these standards start to go into place and become common.
Sure, sure. It's almost like minimum internal control standards, I guess, you know, I mean.
Yeah, exactly, right? But I really want to look to the industry to say, hey, we're going to figure out innovative programs that we think are going to help accomplish these goals.
Right.
And hopefully we can study them, make sure they have some scientific backing to them. And if they do, then these can become standard for the entire industry.
Sure, yeah, no question.
Konami's award-winning Synchros is the casino management system of choice for some of the industry's most innovative operators. Many have chosen Synchros in recent years. Operators like Red River Casinos in Pennsylvania and New York, Desert Diamond Casinos in Arizona, Golden Entertainment with 10 casinos across the U.S., Carnival Corporation and Norwegian Cruise Lines, Las Vegas' newest strip mega resort, Resorts World Las Vegas, and it was selected by the nation's largest casino on the West Coast with over 6,500 slot machines and an amazing new resort hotel. To start speaking with the Konami team about Synchros and why so many casinos are choosing it, visit KonamiGaming.com/connect.
So you wrote an article for us in the in our January issue on responsible gaming in Nevada, and for a state that depends so heavily on gaming revenue, you said it was a big problem for state regulators. What has the response been so far to that article?
Well, it's interesting. I've actually gotten some response. I haven't heard anybody from Nevada specifically, but I've heard from regulators in other states who've come back and said, hey, you know, this is worth talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, we have some standards that we put into place. And, you know, one regulator mentioned the fact that they do have the ability for players to self-exclude.
Right.
But they're not getting any calls.
Right.
Players aren't doing it.
Yeah.
Right. And they said, you know, we think that there's a need for a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
And they like the idea of having some carrots instead of, you know, going back to the old method where you punish people for not meeting minimum standards.
Sure. Right. Right.
And so, you know, I think we're going to have further discussions with some of other jurisdictions on how they might kind of fashion some type of program for certification.
Sure.
Or program.
Well, also, you mentioned the lack of support in terms of monetary support for programs in Nevada. I've interviewed Carol O'Hara many times, and you know, she's such a nice lady. She doesn't come out and complain about it, but she mentions that it's a very, very difficult problem. They don't have enough money to address a lot of these issues.
Yeah, she might not complain, but I will.
Yeah, right.
Because I think that the state is awful with regard to funding, right? And they give a funding amount, I think it's about $1.5 million per year.
Right.
In an industry that's generating $12 billion a year.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem you have is that that little of money set aside, you go, well, where's the greatest need? Well, the greatest need is treatment,
right?
And so we try to get the majority of that money into treatment, right?
Right.
And that's fine. But we don't even understand the scale of the problem because we haven't done a prevalence test forever.
Right.
We don't know where the needs exactly are, the communities that need these services. We don't have the, you know, we have outreach, but maybe not as much as we should,
mm-hmm,
right? We need to get to the people who need the services.
Right.
But we can't do that because we have so little money set aside for doing everything. And, you know, I've tried, along with others, it wasn't me alone, I've tried to increase the amount of funding over the last, I think, six years, three sessions.
Right.
Basically to no avail.
Right. And well, so, wasn't it even decreased a few years ago?
Well,
yeah.
They actually, you know, unfortunately, when the state ran into budgetary problems because of the pandemic.
Right.
they cut the budget in half.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Which is crazy. And that's especially the time you're going to need it in a pandemic. You know.
Exactly right. And over the past 20 years, they've steadily decreased the amount of funding.
Right. Right.
Right. So it's not a great situation for Nevada.
Yeah.
They need, I think, literally they need about two or three times that amount of money, which still isn't a large amount of money in comparison to the industry.
Right.
But it'll actually allow them to do a comprehensive approach towards problem gambling.
Right.
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 Responsible gambling is a little bit different.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. Right.
And I think they should have money for responsible gambling to help fund some of the programs that the casinos might want to implement.
Right.
But I think you have to have a dual approach.
Yeah, yeah, no question. So speaking of regulators, you know, over the past 3 or 4 years, we've had four different chairmen and chairwomen of the casino, of the Gambling Control Board. This is, kind of unprecedented. They usually serve for 4 years at a time and get replaced. But, you know, over the past 3 years, there's been four chairmen. Is this just a matter of circumstances that things fell the wrong way, or is there some other issues here?
I don't know for sure,
yeah.
But my sense is that they just happened to fall that way.
Yeah.
Like, every time you have a change of administration, there tends to be a change in both the chairmanship of the board and the commission.
Right.
So I think that had a little bit to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a little bit had to do with the timing, right?
Right.
Some people's, their terms were up. And some people were to the point where they're naturally of the age that they were going to leave the position.
Sure, right, right.
So, I wouldn't subscribe anything nefarious about that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, there's also. There's a woman head of the Gaming Commission now, Jennifer Togliatti. I got to interview her for one of our People to Watch. She seems to be really interested in making a difference. Have you had a chance to meet her yet?
I have not, yeah. And I look forward to it. I've heard great things, but I think that Nevada is in a kind of unique situation,
right?
In the sense that we've had gaming since 1931.
Right.
We've had, I think, elevated regulation since the 1960s.
And right.
More so after the 1980s. The system works pretty well. And while I think there's things that need to be done to it,
mm-hmm.
it's not very dramatic.
Right.
Right.
Sure. Right.
I think we're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Okay. I do think, for example, that one of the problems Nevada has is that because it has such a long history, it sort of adds on, right? The regulations get bigger and bigger and complicated, right. and it becomes a technocrat sort of nightmare.
Right.
Right. There's fundamentally nothing wrong with the way it works. It's just way too complicated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, if I had any suggestion for regulators, it would be at some point we really need to go in, reorganize, get rid of all the, the dead weight, and make the regulations more accessible and transparent to the people who work in the industry.
Yeah, sure.
So I think that's, if I had to make any suggestion to Nevada, that's what it would be.
Okay, great. So what are some of the issues coming up in gaming law that are still kind of on the cutting edge that still might change the industry, not just in Nevada, but across the country?
Across the world.
The
situation in Macau
mm-hmm.
and Asia, I think, is really very interesting.
Yeah.
Because... as much as they're disconnected, they're still connected.
Right.
Right. If you look at the baccarat numbers in Nevada, mm-hmm. they're tied to Asian play.
Sure.
And the industry, particularly with the IRs, integrated resorts,
right.
they do compete against each other. Right.
Yeah.
And the issue that I'm looking at right now, I think, is kind of interesting. Is all the controversy with the gaming promoters, i.e. the junket reps.
Right, right.
They've impacted significantly industries in Australia.
Sure. Yep.
In Saipan.
Mm-hmm.
And Macau. And they certainly have an impact on the Philippines and Vietnam and other places. It's that intersection is interesting because it brings into play a lot of really significant issues, not only anti-money laundering,
right,
currency evasion,
mm-hmm.
Export controls,
right,
but organized crime.
Yeah, sure.
And they all sort of fit together. So I think that's an interesting area to take a look at in the future.
Sure. Well, you have to be careful of that as well. I mean, look what's happening in Australia with all the investigations into the money laundering and know your customer routines. I mean, it's really troubling, and I think it's a lesson we should learn in this country the same way we should learn the lesson of the over-advertising of sports betting that Europe has already seen, that now we're still getting into it.
Yeah, in the sports wagering, I really worry about sports integrity.
Yeah.
And I think we've been a little bit isolated or insulated mm-hmm. from a lot of the problems that they have in places like Europe and Asia.
Right.
Because the majority of what people here are betting on are NFL, NBA,
right. Sure.
Major League Baseball, hockey. Those have far less potential for influence.
Right.
But as we expand, and we're starting to increase the number and a variety of wagers that are available.
Sure.
I mean, we're going right down into the weeds where, the European and Asian bookmakers have been. And we start betting on some of these minor sports.
Yeah.
Or minor leagues.
Right. Yeah, where the players aren't making millions of dollars a year, and they'll go for a good payday if they can get it.
That's exactly the point, right?
Yeah.
And we have to be careful because, if a betting scandal comes up, it really doesn't make a difference if it's a minor league.
Exactly, right. Yeah.
It really doesn't make it if it's a minor sport,
mm-hmm.
if it's being done at a major U.S. bookmaker.
Right, yeah.
Right?
No question.
And so I think we have to really start paying a lot more attention as the industry starts to broaden the scope of its offerings.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Tony, thanks for taking the time to join us. It's great to see you. And how can people learn more about the program with Entain?
Sure. Yeah. All you have to do is go into the UNLV Boyd School of Law,
mm-hmm.
the website,
right.
and you'll see some links for the gaming law program. And from there, you can get very easily to the executive development program.
Okay, great. Well, good luck with that, and we'll get back in touch with you, after that's well underway, and find out what new classes you're adding and things like that as well.
Sounds great. Thank you, Roger.
Thanks for the time. Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast, with thanks again to Konami Gaming. Head to KonamiGaming.com/connect to start speaking with your Konami's top Synchros representative about your 2022 technology goal. To learn more about gaming law and what it could mean for your casino, visit GGBMagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning, sign up at GGBNews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.